It raised taxes on the rich in order to pay for a national health insurance plan, to pay for new unemployment benefits, to pay for old age pensions. An attempt, in other words, to reform capitalism from above, to anticipate the need for change and to deal with these problems. The liberals, after 1900, would jettison, in other words, their laissez-faire economic orientation and become a reform liberal party. In 1900, the forerunner of the Labor Party would take form, and indeed the party would be formally founded after 1900. And it would be in the first decade of the 20th century that this reform liberalism in Britain would seek linkages to the Labor Party. One saw what in Britain came to be known as the Lib-Lab combination, liberals and labor. Ironically, the conservatives in Britain would become the great party of laissez-faire capitalism. So the solution to this crisis of liberalism in Great Britain would be resolved on the part of the liberals by tacking toward the left, jettisoning classical liberal laissez-faire economics and adopting a reform liberal orientation. With the final possibility of some sort of linkage with the Labour Party. That was possible in part because the Labour Party in Britain was not formally a Marxist party, not formally a revolutionary party. It was heavily influenced by reform socialism, revisionist socialism. Particularly strong was the influence of the so-called Fabians, Beatrice and Sidney Webb, George Bernard Shaw, and others who took a revisionist socialist orientation, making cooperation with the left liberals possible. In Germany, the other country facing in the 1890s this social problem, this is the emergence of an enormous industrial blue-collar working class, the solution was somewhat different. In the 1880s, before he was pressed from office by the new younger Kaiser, in 1888, Otto von Bismarck had introduced a welfare package that put Germany well on the way to becoming a modern welfare state, well in advance of others. In the mid-1880s, he would pass a health package, a workers' compensation package, and so on, all aimed at wooing this industrial working class back over into the fold of what Bismarck referred to as state-preserving forces. However, in 1878, Bismarck had not banned the Social Democratic Party, but rather had banned all of its organizations. In other words, the Socialist Democratic Party could still exist after 1878, but it couldn't organize meetings, it couldn't mobilize a population, it couldn't a constituency, it couldn't publish newspapers, hand out pamphlets, and so on. These so-called anti-socialist laws that Bismarck introduced represented the stick, the social welfare legislation that he passed in the mid-1880s, the carrot. Between 1878 and 1890, the anti-socialist laws remained in effect. But after 1890, the lid was taken off. The anti-socialist laws were allowed to lapse with the removal of the chancellor. I believe I said that Bismarck had left office in 1888. He left in 1890. The new Kaiser comes in 1888, William II. And William II was not keen on, not keen at all on class warfare at home. And in 1890 had pressed for the lifting of the anti-socialist laws. When they were lifted, in 1891, the German Social Democratic Party in its first national congress after the anti-socialist laws the German Social Democratic Party formally adopted Orthodox Marxism as its platform. Before that time, it had not been a Marxist party. After 1891, it would be. Indeed, the German Social Democratic Party would be, as I've already indicated, the model for European socialist parties. It was the most successful, the most thoroughly organized. These 12 years in which they had wandered in the wilderness that